Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
.9 now. Some of the texts I'm getting about hearing the explosions, controlled detonation. Somebody says I was in City Park and it was loud. Somebody else says watching it live on TV a few seconds later heard the boom in Violet. City Park and North Carrollton loud and clear. I heard the explosion from Chalmette. I work at the Folger Coffee Plant. And we didn't hear anything. Sound boom heard well in City Park, outside on my patio, and Lee's Landing in Ponchatoula. Wow, I heard a faint explosion at that time. I was in Gentilly, heard it at the corner of Franklin and Gentilly. Another text from Gentilly said, reminded me of the Continental Grain elevator explosion. Broad and Esplanade, they heard it. Camp on Lake Catherine heard a boom a few seconds later. Lakeview inside of my home, Metairie, Bonneville, and Vets heard it. Felt like we were there in Bayou St. John, so apparently could hear it in a lot of the areas, and I guess that has to do with the way the wind is blowing. Jeannie Zano joins us now, professor of political science at Iona College, because in addition to bringing down cranes from a collapsed building and the football that was going on in the area, I presume there were some goings on in Washington. Were there, Jeannie?
Absolutely, there always are. We don't have a quiet weekend anymore to just enjoy football or to hear the booms of the buildings being brought down.
Well,
so absolutely.
Jump in where you feel comfortable with everything that's going on. What did we miss? What's likely to happen this week?
Well, the Democratic race is really heating up. I will tell you, being in New York City over the weekend, Bernie Sanders had a rally, the largest rally we've seen in the 2020 election yet to date, 26,000, 27,000 people gathered. And he was, of course, endorsed by AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which was a big endorsement for him. So Bernie Sanders, whose fundraising numbers are really good, is got this big endorsement and says he's back and healthy. And, you know, so that is continuing. And of course, you look at Iowa and Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, is really surging in Iowa. So it's really difficult to tell at this point. You know, for a while, we thought maybe Joe Biden would run away with it, but not so fast.
In terms of AOC endorsing Bernie Sanders, I understand it on the left side of the aisle, but on the right side, is that anything, should Bernie Sanders eventually get the nomination, that would motivate conservatives to get out and vote because they don't view AOC, shall we say, favorably?
Absolutely. I do not view this as a, we all want endorsements, but I think this really benefits Elizabeth Warren more than anybody, because Elizabeth Warren wants to sort of tack a little bit to the center. She doesn't want to be seen on the left side of this party as she moves maybe into the general election. So this benefits her because it is, as you said, going to motivate Republicans and people on the right to get out and vote against the Democrats, should that be Bernie Sanders. I don't see this as a big win. Obviously, it's a win for him, given where he finds himself in the party. But I don't see this as a big win in the general election. I think it could be a real loss. And by the same token, we're hearing, from many inside the Republican Party saying whether or not they are really, that enamored with the President Trump, they really do not like Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders. And if one of those people is the nominee, they will continue to support the president, even if he's not their favorite candidate.
So Mick Mulvaney, still the acting chief of staff, he kind of put his foot in his mouth at his, I don't know if he was addressing the media, press conference, whatever you call it.
Yeah, poor Mick Mulvaney, he's still acting, and he stepped into it. He came out at the end of last week. He was supposed to be talking about the president holding the G7 at his Doral golf course, which later the president said he's not going to do. But at the time he went out to make that announcement, the reporters asked him a question. And by many accounts, many people listening said that Mick Mulvaney made the case that there was a quid pro quo as it pertains to the, you know, U.S. funding in Ukraine in the whole connection there. And that was a real problem for him. He then tried to walk it back, and he was out on the Sunday shows over the weekend trying to walk it back. But he has not been very successful in doing that.
I would hate to be the one that had to tell a president what happened, or have the president see me and be called into his office. I can't imagine it was pleasurable at all.
Poor Mick Mulvaney. It was the last thing, and we know that it was the president who forced him to go back out and step back from what he had said. But too little, too late. The president can't be happy. I think a lot of us are wondering if he's ever going to move from acting to full, or if he's just going to be let go at some point, because he really, really got himself in a bit of a quandary with what he said out there.
After last week, I find it hard that the president would say, Mick, you're my guy. By gosh, you've cemented it with your performance.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. Me too. And, you know, I don't know. The president can't be happy. I think the president has long felt like he's the only one he can trust, meaning himself, to deal with the press. And I think Mick Mulvaney sort of made that case for him. We don't see much of Mick Mulvaney, but he came out and he basically admitted to something that is arguably an impeachable offense. So that's hardly what the president or his team want anybody in the administration saying.
You're going to see less of him now. They're going to put him filing some papers in a basement somewhere.
That's right.
Let's talk about this Doral thing, because, you know, I can see this from so many different ways. And for people that don't understand, the president, and he alluded to this, I think after the last G7 meeting, said that he was going to have it at his club in Doral, Trump Resort at Doral, because he said it was the best place to have it. And then he tweeted over the weekend that he's not going to do that because, and I had it open just now, let me see if I can find it here, that because of the media, the mainstream media, et cetera. But it would seem like what that's saying is, Doral in Miami, says the president, would have been the best place to hold the G7 and free, but too much heat from the do-nothing radical left Democrats and their partner, the fake news media. I'm surprised that they allow me to give up my $400,000-plus presidential salary. We'll find someplace else. Just to be clear, the president still draws his salary from the Treasury. So he's not saving the taxpayers any money. I'm not knocking the president. I'm just telling you how it works. So we're still paying his salary, and the fact that he donates it to charity is a nice thing, but sometimes people think that he's saving the government money, and he's not. But on this G7 thing, if you think that's the right place, then why do you change your mind? What you're saying is you let the mainstream media back you, make you back out of something you wanted to do with which there was no problem. If you say then that it was a problem to begin with, and the media pointed that out, I don't understand how the president can rationalize, or his base can rationalize this or understand it at all, because it seems to me either it was right from the beginning or it was wrong from the beginning, because the president doesn't seem to be one to capitulate to the so-called mainstream media. Thoughts?
Yeah, he is not going to capitulate to the media, mainstream or otherwise. This was wrong from the beginning, and it's fairly simple. You know, I have a very low level position compared to the president, and I could not award a contract to a family business from my company. I would assume that you, Tommy, could not award a contract to yourself or a family business for the radio station, right?
I don't think they'd like it.
You know, and actually, beyond not liking it, the Constitution forbids the president taking any foreign money from a foreign entity, which, since this is the G7, that money would be coming from foreign entities. And it requires him only to take his salary and no other payment from the federal government. So both of those are potentially constitutional violations. And so for all of those reasons, this was a bad idea. You're right. He floated it at the last G7 or after the last G7. I was stunned when Mick Mulvaney came out and said that they had made this decision, and we're not sure why they made it. But he was roundly, roundly taken to task by conservatives, not just liberals, by conservatives, people in his own party, except for Marco Rubio, because he's down in Florida, who said, no, Mr. President, you cannot do this. You are asking for trouble at a time when you're weakened. And of course, over the weekend, he then pulled it back and blamed the mainstream media. I don't know anybody who thinks that this is a solid, good idea from any policy, certainly constitutional, but also strategic venue. Imagine if Barack Obama had come out and said he was going to award a contract to a family business. It should never happen, and the president was right to pull it back.
What if he said, you know what, guys, much like donating my salary, it's on me. You come, you eat, you drink, you have a good time, don't worry about it, no tipping, no nothing, it's all on me. G7 doesn't pay for it, security, all that, I got it. Would there be anything wrong with that?
I think there would be an ethical problem with that myself, and people could debate this, but I think you give so much advertising, free advertising, to the resort. And of course, when you have a famous world meeting like that, Bretton Woods, otherwise, these places become historic venues that people want to visit and pay for in the future. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a good idea. I think as a public official, you should stay away from anything that feels like you are personally benefiting from the decision you've made as far as possible. So I would not suggest that is a good idea either. I also am not a fan of him donating his salary, and I know I am in the minority on that, but I think you should accept the pay that you're given, because it does raise other questions when you attempt to make these arguments in the future.
Impeachment hearings, they had a, I don't know if you'd call it an impeachment hearing or not. I don't know what we're calling it right now, an investigation. The House refused to take a full vote on this. Why?
I wish they would. Nancy Pelosi does not want to force her members to go on the record saying they support this at this point. So she has said she will not. It was done for the Nixon inquiry. It was done for the Clinton inquiry. I think they should. I think the Democrats so far have done an okay job running this inquiry, but I think they stumble when they are not transparent, and I wish they would just take this vote. It's such a serious issue to talk about impeaching the president that I really don't buy this argument that we don't want to force members to go on the record. I think you force them to go on the record and say where they stand, not about impeachment, remember, but about the investigation, the inquiry. So I think it's a mistake for Democrats not to do that.
So as it stands now, more people, I guess, are going to testify today before some committees or tomorrow. And just to be clear, the White House has no idea what's going on in these committees. Are the minority members that are on a committee sworn to secrecy, or can they tell the White House what's happening?
They are not supposed to be sharing information. Whether that's happening or not, we know how leaks go in Washington. But I think the White House is rightly concerned when they say it's very difficult for them to have a view on what's going on when none of this is being shared. On the other hand, Congress is saying that we need to get people in these closed door hearings, because if people hear somebody going before them, they know what the person said, and then they could craft their story. So it's a little bit of back and forth like that, but they have been going on. I do think the Democrats will, and I think they should release these transcripts, certainly to the White House, but also I think publicly, once they start to wrap up these hearings, but before they hold any votes on impeachment, because we do have a right to know what these people are saying. We've had a number of testimonies. It's been 4 weeks now. A number of these people have been testifying behind closed doors.
Totally agree. Thank you, Jeannie. I'm glad you called. Well, I'm glad
Great
you called.
To talk to you.
Thank you. thanks for coming on. Jeannie Zeno, professor of political science at Iona College. And what Jeannie is saying, just to understand, that the Republicans and we as...
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.